And I got started studying what was going on back in 1962, and I first learned all about communism. At that time, the communists controlled about a third of the world's population, a third of the world's landmass, and it seemed that communism was a real enemy. And then I began to learn about the Council on Foreign Relations and the Great Tax-Exempt Foundations and the groups here in our country who were really helping communism and were financing communism and were using communism as justification to pursue their goal towards this one world government. And I just traveled throughout the world. I lived in South Africa. We interviewed ambassadors and government leaders and certainly professors, spent many hours going through dusty libraries back at Yale University and Georgetown University, and traveled to Oxford and went through the papers of the Council on Foreign Relations, Harold Pratt House in New York City. But I always felt I was missing something. I didn't know what it was until in the early 1980s I came across a little book. It was called The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. And it introduced me to the New Age movement and the occult movement that was here. And that was the X factor that was missing, that you could begin to tie this all together and begin to understand. And, of course, with us this evening is the author of that book, who did have a profound impact on my life and the lives of so many people, Constance Cumby. Constance, thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you, as usual, for the opportunity.
And, of course, it's late back there, but I appreciate your staying up to tell our listeners a little bit about how the New Age movement in America has begun to reconstitute itself. And, first of all, for our listeners out there who really don't understand what the New Age movement is, maybe you could fill them in and then tell us what's happening today.
Well, the New Age movement's been around in modern form since 1875. There's nothing particularly new about it. And from 1892, it had its primary definition set forth by its founders, which was to prepare the world for the introduction of a New Age Messiah, one who was neither Jesus nor Jewish. And that was Madame Blavatsky, who founded the Theosophical Society, which the New Age historians attribute as the mothership of the New Age movement. And they were about then and are now three major goals: a new world order, and the terminology originated with them, a new world religion, and which they're on some very final thrusts on right now through a vehicle called Alliance of Civilizations. And the third main goal was to prepare the world for the, quote, emergence, unquote, of what they claimed was a new avatar, a new coming Messiah for the age of Aquarius. And that's the $64 question is, who do they intend to trot out on center stage? But they have insinuated themselves into politics. It's what they call a political, spiritual network, and it is both political and it is a religion in many, many senses of the word, maybe every sense of the word, but not a Christian religion, not a Jewish religion, not a Muslim religion, although they have insinuated themselves and have New Age versions of all three of the above. Politically powerful evening. There were many politically influential people in that hall, many very wealthy people in that hall, and ironically, there were brothers and sisters of people I would get to know who were fighting it as vigorously as I was fighting it, who were concerned about their family members. And to my great distress, a former law partner of mine was in the hall, and an accountant of mine was in the hall, and accepting all of this as gospel. And it was a very strange evening, and I realized what I was looking at was a true exercise in mass hypnosis. And I remember towards the end of the evening, I was pretty disgusted at what was taking place. I'd taken a few other Christian spies with me. And towards the end of the evening, Benjamin Krem asked the crowd to group, and he had been there from, say, 7, I think it's the evening started at 6:30, and at 11 o'clock they were still going. And he asked those remaining, some had to leave to go for work or to get to bed at a decent hour, of course, and he asked those remaining to gather up front for a recitation of the great invocation, a prayer to their, basically to Lucifer to come take the world for their new Messiah. Or the new Messiah to come take the world for Lucifer. It started out from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth, so on and so forth. And they, I told the lady next to me that when they did that, I would not be saying their prayer. I would be saying my own prayer. And she said, well, that's all right. We all have our paths to God. And I told her very patiently why I would not pray along with Benjamin Krem on this great invocation. And she turned to me and she said, there's been many Christs. And I said, there's been one, and his name is Jesus. And they turned from about every row around and looked like I was from somewhere in outer space. Anyway, they came in, and Benjamin Krem started his recitation, and almost twirling his neck very, very close to 360 degrees. I never saw a neck contort that much in my life. And it might have been a chiropractor's conspiracy, I don't know. But anyway, he had an unnatural brightness in his eyes. He had done it at the opening, and he did it at this. He promised the crowd he would have channeling, a transmission directly from Maitreya the Christ as soon as he was done, and his literature claims he had it everywhere. He did not have it that night in Detroit, and that was one of the spookiest things I saw. They started out, and he went from the point of light within the mind of God, may light stream forth, and I went nice and loud, and I'll tell you, the acoustics were wonderful in that room. You could project. He said, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And I did that every stanza as they were doing it. In the last stanza, they went, may light and love and power restore the plan on earth, and may it seal the door where evil dwells, which they define in their Alice Bailey writings as shutting Jews, Christians, and Muslims into their own separate place. And I went nice and loud. I said, may Jesus Christ return to earth and end the evil present in this room tonight. Well, the funniest thing happened, or should I say didn't happen. Benjamin Krem waited. He waited. He waited. The spookiest thing was he wasn't just faking it. He was waiting for something to come over him, and it didn't happen. He finally excused the crowd, and they went out, and everybody was very angry, and lots of people in the room knew me. I'm well-known in the Detroit area. And, of course, there were many sharp, caustic remarks directed at me going out. And I said, well, if you're Maitreya the Christ or Betraya the Christ or whatever his name's supposed to be, is everything he's cracked up to be, one lousy Christian in the auditorium saying the Lord's Prayer shouldn't have stopped him. But anyway, that was then, and then I ended up, a few months later, they ran their newspaper ads, and 5 days after they ran their ads, or within the ads ran April 25th, 1982, full-page newspaper ads all over the world, from Kuwait to Karachi, from Jerusalem to New York.
Even the Reader's Digest didn't have them.
Reader's Digest had a full-page ads for Lucis Trust, the Great Invocation. The newspapers had these huge ads, Expect the Christ, and they were supposed to be imminent. And within a week and a half after those ads ran, the Detroit Free Press, through a reporter who had been a New Age activist, and after I showed her what she was involved with, she had turned 180 degrees and became a Christian, God bless her. And they did a page and a half spread on my work against the New Age movement and the ads, and said the ads, a cult and a crusade. And within my phone was ringing nonstop, and for 7 years, as you know, I was on the road full time, explaining the New Age movement and its hidden dangers to the American, to the Canadian public, and my books were translated in several foreign languages, and we managed to get the word out worldwide on what was going on, and we did it on a shoestring. And that was the New Age movement then, and to this day when they write their books and they write their papers and talk about their opposition, very often I'm the only one that gets mentioned. There's a book by Martin Palmer, a top advisor to British royalty. Most of the darn book is attacking me. And Christianity in the New Age. John Nesbitt has me mentioned in his Megatrends 2000. And Paul Helas, a New Age insider on a book on the New Age movement, said the two most formidable foes of the New Age movement, and he said the most formidable foe was Pope John Paul II, and he named a statement he gave and then said, for a hard-hitting perspective, from a Christian perspective, Constance Cumby, the hidden dangers of the rainbow. It's just me and the Pope, that's all.
We still carry that book. We think it's a great book. It's, I don't know if there'll be any more of them. The publisher went bankrupt. Do you have any more of them?
They're hard to find, but... I'm toying with putting the entire thing in the public domain.
Well,
I really am. I've, rather than saying Don't copy it under pain of death. I'm saying go forth and multiply. Go forth and multiply.
Well, we actually still have copies. We have probably a half a case of them, and we think it's such
an important... Send me a clean one. Yeah, okay.
Right.
I have trouble laying hands on my own book.
Well, if you need one, let us know.
We'll get it. I sure will.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, you've done a wonderful job, and I remember hearing you talk over in San Jose. It was the first time I ever saw you, and it was a standing-room-only crowd at the time. And so this then began to get people to understand that there was another factor. There was an X factor, something that isn't ordinarily talked about in most churches, certainly not most of the conservative or Republican or Christian leaders are talking about it. But Constance got the word out, and there was an increasing awareness that there were these other people. These were the ones that were looking for the masters, the Great White Brotherhood, or the Elder Brothers, they have all sorts of names for these people, but they're really, I believe, they're demonic beings that are actually influencing so much of the affairs of men.
Yeah, demonic beings, and they have a fair share of human helpers.
Right. So anyway, of course, we're now almost 24 years later.
We're 25 years since I discovered it.
Right, and 24 years since that momentous evening when you frustrated poor old Benjamin Krebs.
24 and a half, okay.
But of course, I take his publications on a regular basis. He's still saying the same thing, and they say that time is coming closer and closer.
Yes, and interestingly enough, there was a harmonic convergence between another area of my research in Benjamin Krebs. There was the Spanish version of his Maitreya, the Great World Teacher website, had a fairly large picture of Benjamin Krebs with a rotating globe and talking about how he was talking at the London School of Economics with Anthony Giddens, who is another insider in all these circles. Sponsoring him to speak there, and how, gee, what a coincidence, he's saying all the things that our Maitreya is going to say.
Well, I think it's really so interesting for our listeners out there. They have really, literally millions of followers throughout the world. This is not a small movement. This is a massive movement. It's subterranean. Most people don't know it's there, but it really is there. They've got a tremendous amount of financing behind them. And there are people at the highest levels of our government who, you know, are working right along with them.
Oh, yes. And lots of support from... The night I was there, I noticed that just about every cult in town was out. The Unification Church people were there. The Unitarians were there. Unity was there, of course. And many of these little offbeat New Age churches were there in force. It was quite a sight to behold that first particular night. He's never come back to Detroit, by the way. I think Detroit, he may have had the largest, most successful show he's ever performed, and Detroit's the one place he's never returned to. And I couldn't be happier about that.
Well, of course, these people really want to prepare the world for the coming of Lucifer to take charge, or at least one of Lucifer's representatives.
That was one of the things I could get people out with, Stan, Dr. Monteith.
You call me Stan.
Okay, if I could show people your average participant and show them the Lucifer things, because sometimes it was shock treatment, and then they hadn't remembered enough their Christianity to remember that Lucifer was the devil. And if you could catch people at that level and get them to think about it, many, many New Agers turned course and ran. In fact, one of the publisher of Donald Keyes and Norman Cousins' book, Earth at Omega, had a Jewish background from Massachusetts. And after he wrote me a really nice letter and said he read my book and he had changed courses a bit because of it, he came actually to Hornell, New York, and I had the opportunity to meet him. He was interviewed on a radio interview with me. And he forced them to get a new publisher, and he burned his remaining stock of their books.
Well, of course, the thing is that we have a few successes there, and I think we're going to have more and more, because I think as things get worse and worse, people are going to give in looking for answers, and they're going to come to you, and they're going to come to me, and they're going to come to the listeners of our program, who do begin to understand there really is a Luciferian movement. It works through all sorts of organizations, Rosicrucians, Theosophists, the Masons, they're there, they know exactly what they're doing, the Club of Rome, they have an agenda. Constance has been talking about Javier Solana. Now, two of many of our listeners, that name may not be familiar, but this is one of the most powerful men in the world, although he's not that well known in the United States. You can go up on the Internet, though, and look up information on him. And Constance has some great information. We'll tell you later how to get in touch with her, and she'll tell you how to learn about Javier. But he's a man. He was actually a Spanish socialist, very much anti-American, and suddenly he's pushed into a position as in charge of NATO, and then he moves from position to position in Europe. He is the single most powerful man in Europe, and yet the average American has never heard of him. What's his official position right now?
Officially right now his title is Secretary General of the European Union, Secretary General of the Western European Union, a 10-nation military federation. He is also Office of the High Representative of the Common Foreign and Security Policy of the European Union, in charge of all EU military and foreign policy.
In other words, in charge of the military.
Yes, he also is in charge of the European space programs and has complete power, sole power, to shut down the Galileo project. He also is in charge of the Barcelona process, the 27-nation federation of Mediterranean countries, and he was in charge of NATO for 4 years, the Atlantic Council, and effectively he has a lot of say-so over NATO because the people running NATO basically check in with Solana on the policy decisions. He had more individual personal power than anybody ever running NATO had before or since. And it seems like he piles power on top of power. Now he's been negotiating treaties all over the world with various countries in the Eastern Hemisphere and the Western Hemisphere, and to add troops to his European army. And most recently, he negotiated a treaty with Canada, which was surprising because he sent Spanish warships against Canada in 1995 when he was Foreign Minister of Spain and delegated that power by the Spanish government. In Chile, Argentina have signed treaties to contribute troops to his European armies, Operation Alfea. And he has several armies on the ground. His job was set up in December of 1998, with specifications obviously written around him. And the specifications were contained in Section 666 of the Europa Code. Then in the Western
666, just by accident, it was 666, right?
Yeah, sure. I have wondered about that because his family certainly is has a background in the occult. His mother was and grandfather and great and grandmother were all fascinated by what they called the Invisible College. His mother wrote a book which she said had been blessed by her spiritual teacher, Osho, but better known to us as Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, on the life of Sir Francis Bacon. And his grandfather was a good friend of H.G. Wells and was very tight with the European theosophical crowd. In fact, there is some very good evidence that his grandfather was the disciple referred to, the Spanish disciple referred to by Alice Bailey in the Rays in the Initiations and Instructions to Disciples, as one plowing preparing the European ground to receive the New Age and plowing it over stony ground. His grandfather is listed in my second book in the appendix taken from Planetary Citizens and at letterhead. And in 1938, his grandfather is important because his grandfather was his mentor. His grandfather, Salvador de Madariaga, the writer, gave seminars and conferences with H.G. Wells and two other individuals. And I believe 1938, I've managed to obtain an actual copy of this on the Internet, found it from a British press and ordered it, and they graciously sent it. And they were acting as though Christianity were dead and buried then. And then, interestingly enough, Salvador de Madariaga's speech to that crowd on the lectures on the New World Order, and that's what it was called, the New World Order. In his lectures, he talked about that great angel who came to our planet and made a sacrifice for our planet for the sake of the pride of God. And of course, you don't have to have be an honor student in theology to figure out who that angel was that he was talking about, that much maligned angel. And he was discussing, basically talking about Lucifer in complimentary tones, which fit right in with the agenda of the New Agers. Benjamin Krem, the spokesperson for the Christ Is Now Here crowd, had said that Lucifer was the planetary oversoul towards which we were all ascending, all attempting a return to. And it appears that Solana's grandfather shared those beliefs.
But before we go on, Constance, I want you to get out your website so people would know how to get in touch with you. And if you have anything else, a telephone number or email you want to put out. But let's get your information out right now.
Actually, the blog spot is an excellent way to reach me. And there's a little bulletin board on there where you can correspond with me. And all the back columns are archived. And the nice thing about it is it's absolutely free. And it's worldwideweb.www.cumby.com. cumbey.blogspot.com. That's www.cumbey.blogspot.com. And a lot of people looking at those issues look at that, and then we've got links to many of the important research sites, and I have a link to Herb Peters' site, fulfilledprophecy.com. And in turn, he has links to just about every important European Union research site. So there's a lot of information that can be gained very quickly by studying the two sites. And I've noticed with interest that some of the English news service sites, particularly the Euroskeptics, were linking to my blog spot.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that the European Union is just part of this overall move towards the one world government, just as NAFTA and CAFTA and here in the Western Hemisphere. And, of course, they want to get in the free trade zone of the Americas. The master plan is to unite Europe and Asia and probably then Africa.
Right.
The Western Hemisphere, the North and South, or just North and South, and then, of course, they want to then, of course, probably pick up the Middle East, and then we will unite the entire world into this one world government.
And they have a name for this, Dr. Mantis. It's called integration. And integration, and at times Solana has been through South America and Colombia, and if they had regional disputes, he would upbraid them vigorously at meetings and tell them they were interfering within the region's integration. And these plans are made around us now. The interesting thing is the United States is cooperating with them, and they're cooperating with them on the Alliance of Civilizations, which is one of the most disturbing aspects of this. But the European Union has some not very secret plans to dislodge the United States as a competing superpower in the 21st century struggle for control of scarce global resources.
Well, tell us what you think is going to happen in the Middle East, because you think that they have a plan for the Middle East.
Well, it's in place, okay? What they have done was the Barcelona process, which was first put in place on November 22, 1995, a week after a treaty with Israel was entered into by the European Union, the first of several treaties of association with countries down there. And they now have expanded this process and modified it and upgraded it into a seven-year plan, which is due to start January 1st, 2007, and run through the end of 2013 with a three-and-a-half-year review period halfway through. And these are called European Neighborhood Action Plans. And they have had the European Framework Programs, which are coming out of the sixth, and this program is to be the seventh Framework Program. Concomitant and concurrent with this, they are also into a total global observation program. Now, this is very disturbing, and it's a total program for basically being able to observe about every stick and stone on planet Earth. They call these things, one is called GMES, Global Monitoring Environmental Survey, I believe, and the Global Monitoring Environmental Security, and that's the EU's plan. And then there's a Global Environmental System of Systems, and the United States is working with them on that one. Everything is supposed to be operational and in full place by 2008. And it's supposed to be especially helpful for the Mediterranean Free Trade Zone. that they seek to have fully in place by midnight 2010. And that's the security, the neighborhood action plan that starts January 1st, 2007. Solana had a bit of a struggle getting the budget through, but he did get the budget through. Individually shaped action plans are in place for the various countries. It's supposed to be measured according to the country's needs. And reminds me not just a little bit of the ad in Benjamin Krem's paper describing their new so-called Christ, the Take Your Brother's Need as Your Measure for Your Action. And they've taken these neighborhood action plans and taken each country's individual measured needs. And then basically they play ball with the European Union, and if they're good boys and girls and good little countries under Solana, at the end of the 3.5 years, they're supposed to get more or get it continued. And if they're not, then the carrots will be taken from them, and they'll be given sticks instead.
Well, because as we look in the Middle East, it certainly looks like with Hamas in power in Palestine, there's going to be increasing violence there. And that, of course, seems like we're doing everything we can to inflame the Islamic world, to unite the Islamic world.
Those cartoons certainly. Here's what the New Agers think they're going to do. They think their action plan is to pit the three target groups against each other. Now, what are the targets? Well, the part targets are what they call peoples of the book. Peoples of the book they define as Jews, Christians, and Muslims, at least the Orthodox among them. And they're going to have us all fighting each other. We stand for three dead and gone religions that should pass away, and we're going to be sealed into our own separate place after we do that. And I think we're going to blow each other up, kill each other off, and then they're going to be the phoenix that comes in and arises from the ashes to rebuild the new society.
Well, do you see then a war coming in the Middle East? I mean, a larger war than we have?
They're working on inciting a war, and I think, you have to look at these Bailey books a little bit more carefully. People have sometimes tended to brush it off, and she said that a war was coming that would dwarf all other wars, and it would be based on religion. And it certainly looks like that is exactly what is shaping up, and not only that, some kindling has been added to the fire.
No, because when did Alice Bailey write that? Because she died
She died in 1949.
It was after the Second World War then.
She did her writing in a 30-year segment, various segments, and then she wrote them between 1919 and 1949 when she died.
And, of course, these were actually channeled to her by a demonic spirit, weren't they?
Oh, that's what she claims, that it was a telepathic transmission from a Tibetan master. She called him D.K. or Jawal Kool.
Now, where does she talk about this great war that's coming later? Because I think that is fascinating.
Okay, one of the books was the externalization of the hierarchy.
Right, okay.
And that specifically mentioned it. The rays in the initiations mentioned the sealing away of humanity into its own separate place. And, in fact, if people have a notion, they can research this now for free on the Internet, because there is a site from Coe Switzerland, C-A-U-X, that has all the Alice Bailey books up there, and I find it kind of handy-dandy if I'm writing my blog and I need to quote something from her. Then I just put in the words that I do remember, and up pops the rest that I don't remember, and then I can cut and paste it and quote it accurately in my blog spot.
And what would you look for this coming war from the externalization of the hierarchy? What words would you...
I might try war, dwarf... religious.
Okay, war.
And Bailey, Alice Bailey.
All right.
And in fact, I can try it. If I could put the phone on the speaker for a minute, I could even try to pull one up while we're sitting here.
No, I don't want to do that,
okay.
Because I'm so fascinated in what you have to say. Because we've been telling our listeners, and I'm firmly convinced that we are moving into a war in the Middle East, and I really fear that we're doing everything we can to inflame the entire Islamic world against the West. But the question is, will Europe be with America, or will Europe use this war to destroy America?
Well, it's interesting. They've been cultivating the Middle Eastern countries, of course, and of course the perception is the scarce global resources. So which one is going to be used? But right now, the ironic thing is, it looks like on the New World Religion thrust that there actually is some official United States support for this so-called Alliance of Civilizations, which obviously is being used as a vehicle for enforced religious syncretism. And basically another New Age plan was that in the New Age it will not be blessed be my God, in the New Age it would be blessed be thy God, and everybody is supposed to give due respect to everybody else's God. And of course, and then also for the environment, earth worship is being discussed, and that is one line we as Christians dare not cross. That was the sternest message of John in his revelation. He fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come. Worship God who created the heaven, the earth, the sea, and the fountains of waters. And basically they're talking about everybody gives deference, you all compromise, you put all the deities in the pantheon, you give them all some honor, and if you're not willing to do that, then by golly, you're a dangerous fundamentalist who does not belong here.
I'm always amazed how they talk about fundamentalists. Of course, they're talking about Muslims, and then the next thing they're talking about Christian fundamentalists, as if Christian fundamentalists and radical Muslim fundamentalists are all cut from the same bowl of cloth.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what they really want to do is demonize Christianity and marginalize those of us who are trying to get the truth out.
And that's exactly what they're doing, and that's exactly what people have to be prepared for and be able to take, and people have to get used to being marginalized, and this is part of the game that they're going to try to marginalize them. I think that's one reason the New Agers were as threatened by me as they were. I was one of the few people who successfully marginalized them for a period of time. In fact, Marianne Williamson, who came to Detroit, spoke very angrily of those who were attempting to marginalize the New Agers. Of course, their game had been to marginalize us, and their material is just lends itself to sarcasm. You know, you pick up a book and read that Lucifer comes to bring us the gift of wholeness. If we accept it, then he is free and we are free. And it's pretty hard not to be able to put that into the margins, but it's pretty scary when they take that and they put our God into the margins and then make that the mainstream, and that's where they're headed.
And I think that we're really in into a period of chaos and crisis here in the United States. But maybe it's going to take that to really wake people up to what's going on. At least I hope at least some of them will wake up. Well, as far as Javier Solana is concerned, certainly he seems to be in really a key position as far as Europe is concerned. Now, do you think that they're going to try to organize Europe just as a bloc? Are they going to be successful? Certainly.
Well, Europe, they've been pretty successful with already. When Marilyn Ferguson, back in 1980, wrote The Aquarian Conspiracy, 79, I believe she wrote it, And she wrote that Europe was the ideal place from which to launch their new political spiritual entity. And they've basically, the New Age agenda met with very friendly reception very early in my research on this. Marilyn Ferguson did make many trips to Europe to speak even to the European Parliament and meet with who knows who else. She spoke publicly about that many times of her trips to address the European Parliament. And I noticed that Solana's mother was corresponding with Brithoff Kapra, who's a leading theoretician for the New Age movement, in addition to her relationship with Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
And of course, this all fits into this. It's into so much Indian occultism, but the foundation of India is really is founded on the occult, isn't it?
Well, now Javier Solana is an atheist. That needs to be understood. He really doesn't have, if he has any religious impulses at all, he's hidden them very well. When the Pope died, for example, He manages to write flowery things about almost everybody, but when the Pope died, he just said condolences to the Catholic Church on the disappearance of its spiritual leader. And he used the word disappearance. In 2003, he wrote very mockingly about the United States being too religiously driven. And even the bells that they've pushed and the whistles that they've pushed on this, using 666 to number his resolutions and the bills empowering him, I mean, who's as deficient as his anti-clerical religious education might have been, I'm certain he should have known about Christian sensitivities on that particular issue. And then the European building was built in the form of an unfinished tower of Babel. and then Javier Solana, and the others participated in the marginalization of Rocco Buttiglione, who Barroso, the, I believe, the socialist prime minister of Portugal, wished to have on his European cabinet, and Rocco Buttiglione was ruled out because, even though Barroso wanted to appoint him because, A, he had family values, B, he thought homosexuality was a sin, although he pledged he would not discriminate against homosexuals, C, he thought abortion was a sin, and for that reason he was deemed unfit to sit in European ruling halls and was marginalized, and oh, also he was supposed to have been a friend of the Pope. So he was pushed out, and they don't mind pushing Christian buttons, but right now it's make nice with the Arabs, and while they were trying to get their way with Israel, make nice with Israel. And right now the European Union, under Javier Solana's direct chain of command, is a program to running the Gaza Strip borders, at the crossing at Ramallah, and also in Iraq itself, a program called EU Just Lex, which is a $200 million a year equivalent program to train the Iraqi judiciary, the Iraqi police, and the administrators of both of them. Now, you give me the Oakland County police, a sheriff, and the Oakland County judiciary, and the administrators who run both, wouldn't that just make me king or okay queen of the hill here in Oakland County, Michigan, where I practice law? And the chain of command ends with Javier Solana, or they have it SG/HR, standing for Secretary General High Representative. And he's built these programs into many countries, and just quietly he's written in as the one that the accountability is to, and moreover, they have the foreign minister position set up for which he's the designate, and that it's a strong foreign minister, weak presidency. And then the Galileo space program, they said, like it or not, it has to be Solana who has the power to shut it down, that we can't even entrust this to the presidency. It is one of the greatest games of trust me the world has ever seen.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that that Benjamin Krembling brings out is that, you know, every great religion is waiting for their coming leader, whether it be Maitreya for the Hindu, the Mahdi for the Muslim, the Messiah for the Jew, the Christ for the, or I should say Jesus Christ for the Christian. So where does Javier Solana fit into that?
Well, I've wondered about that. There are times I'm starting to suspect that they may have planned to have trotted him out in 1982 and claimed he was the one, and he had to settle for a crummy little position in Spain for a few years instead.
Well, anyway, it's going to be really exciting as we begin to see this thing unfolding. And I really think, of course, we're moving into a crisis situation in the Middle East. And I don't think the average individual has any idea what the implications are of America attacking Iran. And that's what we're talking about. We're going to attack Iran.